Toby, are you listed in this class too? Let me just write your name down. D-O-V-I?
Yes.
Metzger.
Hello.
Wait, oh no, you are T-E-I. T-E-I-T-L-E.
Correct, yes.
I remember you had that. And where are you from?
Boca Raton,
Florida. Boca, right. We spoke about that. We spoke about the parking lot. Don't think the Rebbe is so ignorant. Okay. Ephraim, how are you? You went shopping, I see.
You're insisting I take some vacation at the office.
Kala kavod. Rick, how are you? All right, I hope we'll have it a little bit more than last week. People are recovering, but the call is very small. I saw the class before this. It's also 5-6 students. Wow. All right, what can we do? We Nekavela Tov, ready to roll. Today is Sunday, November 13th, 2016, and we here in the State of Israel don't know that there's a winter yet. We're walking around today without jackets. It's unbelievable, but I've lived here, you know, many years. Sometimes there is no winter. It's unbelievable. Sometimes there is no winter. So maybe Vic Rain will remain Vic Snow this year. Baruch Hashem. Now, to pick up where I left off, I have to tell you that our Shayurim on Rav Shlomo Kalbach attracted a lot of comments from all over the world. And good comment, negative comment. Here I hold up an article from Tablet, also filled with interviews, Kalbach's Broken Mirror. And we have, you saw, Rav Moshe Feinstein had a more liberal attitude. And I'm positive that Rav Moshe knew Shlomo Kalbach. It's not shaykh that he didn't know him. As I mentioned to you, Shlomo was one of Rav Aaron Cutler's top talmidim when Lakewood began. And then he went to Chabad. It was when I learned in Lakewood, they were furious at Chabad, and among their other reasons, and then I've spoken, there were many reasons why in Lakewood they were furious at Chabad. But among their other reasons, Kalbach, who was an Ilui and had a very good mind, and suddenly he finds himself in Lakewood, not in Lakewood, but in Chabad. All right. So I want to tell you, my student, Dr. Alan Blau, well-known psychologist, hi, Rebbe. With regard to your recent and wonderful shiurim and whether it is permitted to listen to and sing Shlomo Kalbach's son's songs, I would like to point out that this question has a historic precedent. Everyone sings Rebbe Yisrael Nijara's Kol Ribon Olam on Friday night. But Rebbe Chaim Vital in his Sefer HaChesyonot accuses Rabbi Yisrael Nijar of being a drunkard with a filthy mouth, who among other things had sex with a non-Jewish woman and also had homosexual relations. Mark Shapiro cites this in his recent book, Changing the Immutable, How Orthodox Judaism Rewrites Its History. We have the autographed manuscript from Chaim Vital, so that there is no little question that he wrote it, but all but one of the published editions of Sefer HaChesyonot, it's written in English, I'm having a problem with it, censored Rabbi Yisrael Najara's name from the book. It should be noted that the Chatam Sofer, and I have to tell you, it's very interesting, I'm mentioning the Chatam Sofer, because my eldest daughter and her husband are at the Chatam Sofer's Kever as we speak. They had an appointment to visit. You have to make an appointment to visit his Kever. They're there right now, Sunday evening. It should be noted that the Chatam Sofer used to not sing Kol Ribon Olam for this reason. After being asked why he didn't sing it, he chose to include it in his Friday night's Zmirat rather than reveal the reason. It should also be noted that while other sources are similarly critical of Rabbi Yisrael, and I am attaching the relevant sources from Sefer what's the word I used before? Man, it's a trouble. Chesyonot, as well as praise for Rabbi Yisrael from the Sefer Chemdat Hayomim, and he attaches all the sources there. So I have to tell you my conclusion after thinking about this and struggling, and I struggled last week, and I reached the conclusion, I'm too frum. I judge people, I'm too frum. What do I mean I'm too frum? I grew up in the world of Musar, and I saw Gedolei Yisrael up close. And for me, as I mentioned to you, it's very hard even for me to comprehend David Melech Yisrael. Remember I told you last week, and Bat Sheva, and people say to me, with this Rosh Yeshiva, who's now a rabbi in a shul, and Eshet Ish, and I said, how can you make this man rabbi? And they said to me, and I have a big problem, because he greets me and hugs me, and Haravra Kefet, Mashlamcha, we know each other 48 years, from the day I came in Aliyah. So I have to tell you my conclusion. What I said last week was very powerful, and I sign on the dotted line. The Jewish people have a good sense. The average individual does good things. Maybe occasionally he does something bad. He has a Yetzer Hara. I had a funny life. I mentioned to you in my first rabbinate, my ego was taken away from me. And when you don't have an ego, and you know, and you learn Musa, I don't know, the word sin does not enter into my vocabulary. But there are people who do great things, and at times did very bad things. And Klal Yisrael responds. Remember, I quoted two Gemaras to you: "Imlo neviim chaim, b'nei neviim chaim." The Gemara in Psachim, Daf Samach Vav, about Hillel Hazakein, the Gemara in Bracha, it's four times in Shas, this expression, but the Gemara in Bracha is Daf Mem Dalin Amid Bet Mem Heyom Aleph, right at the top. Fuk Chazi Mai Ama Devar. Go out and see what the frum people are doing. And the people sing Kari Bon Olam. As a matter of fact, Friday night, I was at my daughter's, and she had a lot of her family there, my grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And in addition, one of my grandsons brought a friend of his from Bezalel. And this friend, very upsetting, you know, it's what you read about in the newspapers, came from a Haredi home. He decided he wanted to integrate, to become an Israeli. He was very upset with his parents that they never let him study anything, the core curriculum. You all know what's going on in Israel today. And the kid left home and he joined the army, and now he's in Bezalel with my grandson. He's a great artist, has tremendous ability. My grandson and this young man both can, within minutes, do Hollywood level cartoons. It's beyond words, their ability. And he could never go home again. He's a Chayil Bodeid. He lives in, he works in a youth village. So they give him a home and give him food. It's a very, very sad story, what you have on the Israeli scene of foolish, foolish parents. Thank God he retains a connection to Yiddishkeit. My grandson has a role in it. So we were talking and learning, talking. We had just had a very big Thursday night, an engagement party. I'll talk about it tomorrow. It fits in with tomorrow's lecture. And we had a lot to talk about and a lot of Divrei Torah. And my daughter is very makpid. You have to sing as Mirat. What can I do? I come from a different world, but my daughter is makpid. And what, she says, choose a Zema. So what did they choose? Kari Bon Olam. So could you imagine? I'm going to pop up and yell and shout, how are you singing Kari Bon Olam if after all, the author of a novel? So you see, Klal Yisrael makes a decision ultimately. The good outweighs the bad. I imagine we'll have to approach it this way. And here's the way I want to remember Shlomo. This is a historic picture from 1952. If you recognize where this picture is taken, it's right outside 770. And there's Shlomo with a whole group of people whom he's taking to meet the Rebbe. And this picture captures 1972. Someone is here with a bow tie, and that's exactly what I wore. If you ever see a picture of me out of the 60s, I had no time to play with the tie. Everyone wore a bow tie. These are the type of hats we wore. That's the way we dress. That's the way the women dress. Notice the length of the skirts. That has nothing to do with religion. It has to do that, as Dennis Prager, and someone just said it to me the other night at the engagement party, we all went to public high schools, and the message we got outside of Shabbat, essentially something, a Jewish ritual, they didn't teach you Shabbat or Kashrut or Tarat Mashpacha, but all their other values were exactly Torah values. You remain a virgin till you get married, you're loyal to your wife, you don't have open marriages, homosexuality is an abomination, etc., etc. And that's the way I would like to remember Shlomo. If you notice, to a certain degree, he was right. Once he got involved in this type of outreach, the Rebbe wanted him to separate men and women. Basically, it's impossible. You see this picture? It's typical of that era, and it's typical of this era. If a whole group from young Israel of West Hempstead or a young Israel of Woodmere is going to come to hear a public lecture by Harav Rakefet, You can't separate them. They're going to come. We're not davening. This is the way they live today. We had a big enough battle to keep the mechitza during davening. Baruch Hashem, we won that battle. But you see, this is a typical picture. This is Kalbach. Notice, he's between two women. Look, notice, and look at his face. Angelic face. So halacha lemaisa, I want to thank Dr. Blau. I want to thank all those who contacted me. But halacha lemaisa, please don't quote me as saying it's forbidden to sing Shirei Kalbach. That there's a black and white to him, absolutely. That the testimony, Lilith magazine is not exactly a lover of Torah or a lover of the male species. I told you, the founding editor was my sister-in-law's classmate. She was a few years beneath Malka and Ramaz. Her enmity towards men is unbelievable. I've read things that you can't even start to decipher how people think that way. But the evidence is quite strong. And I told you, my wife's first cousin, who's so distant, but she's could be involved with Kalbach in the 60s. It makes sense. She got involved, a hippie, and never. What's the difference? What we suffer from the modern world. Well, you see, Trump was elected, and they closed down classes in Barnard University. I was told this by my daughter and my granddaughter-in-law. Her sister's in Barnard now. They closed classes on Wednesday. The teachers couldn't teach. The students couldn't study. Churban Habayit, worse than Tisha B'Av. Trump was elected. So she's part of this world. And she told us years ago that Kalbach used to call her. She was at the other end of the world in Peru, helping out with the unfortunate children there. And Kalbach used to call her in the middle of the night and ask her what she's wearing. And I couldn't believe it. I said to Malka, your cousin's off the wall. And here you have other testimony. And you remember what I told you, what the Masad taught me about testimony. So when two, three, four, five women from five different parts of the world who don't know each other tell you exactly the same thing, believe me, you better believe it. But with all and said and done, halakha l'maisa, in my shul, I daven Friday night with my children, the shul my children run. My son-in-law is the president, the gabbai runs, without him, it's a shul every day. One is world famous. But Nebuch, they need my son-in-law, the place will fall apart. And so, this was not a Shabbos Mevorchim, it was not a Kalbach Shabbos. Yet, when they reached Mizmol B'nei Elim, how does it begin? Mizmol David, the Kalbach Nigin. And then the Lechododi and the Mizmashir Le'yom HaShabbos, I didn't stand up and walked out. I accepted it graciously. Now, do me a favor, Natan. Line up three, because we want to be sure I have a minion. Where's Yitzchak? Where's? All right. Yeah, Shoma, Yitzchak, you are not. That is for sure. Okay, I have a gift for you later. as I said, I would have a gift this week, but Kachave. My dear students, we're shifting gears now on a very, very fascinating question. You're not going to forget this, Tshuva, and it leads us into a whole new world. Avram, then we get involved in your world. It's one after another, as you will see. But let's begin at the beginning. Gentlemen, let me tell you a story about a kid named Arnie Rothkopf, who, as I said before, was is very frum and a big Hanoi. And this is what happened to Rothkopf. I think he writes about it in Washington. It's and it's in a book. It has to be true, all right? So I learned in Lakewood. And in Lakewood, there was a big Reform temple. So Friday night, we were big matmidim in Lakewood. But Friday night after the meal and Shabbos after lunch, many people went for walks. I write about it in Washington. I'm not going to repeat what I write there. But one thing, we would occasionally pass the Reform Temple. So when I would pass the Reform Temple, I would say, Shaketz de Shaktenut, Ta'ev Ta'venu, Kicherim Hu, three times. That's Minig Yisrael. Right or wrong, do you know that? Shaketz de Shaktenu, Ta'ev Ta'venu, Kicherim Hu. Three times I would say it. And I remember I'm walking with these old timers from Lakewood, Bekiyim and Shas and Poskim. And they say to me, wow, you're a Kanoi. You're a zealot. You're cursing the Reform Temple. That's the story I write about, and it really happened. I'm not making it up. I had a dear friend, Gideon. Welcome, we need you. We need you for the minion. We now have a minion, one person will come back, we're set. I had a dear friend, Chaim Noble. Anyone listening recognize the name? One of the great, who later goes on to one of the great Mira Talmidim in Eastern and New York and Flatbush, wrote Sfarim, London, Mufak. He was a year younger than me. We were bosom buddies, Chaim and I. After high school, I went to, he went from Lakewood to Mir, and I went from Lakewood back to Yeshiva College. So we split, but we remained in touch all these years. He's a fabulous individual. So Chaim and I, after when we started Talmudical Academy, it was a revelation. We had 2 weeks off in the middle of the year. Whoever had 2 weeks off from school before? When you're in elementary school, Dovi, you never get a vacation. And here we had 2 weeks. What were the 2 weeks off? At that time, if you had 90 or more, you didn't have to take the midterm. You were exempt. In 90 or more average on midterms and classes, you were exempt from the midterm. At the end of my first 2 years in high school, they abolished it because they said, and rightfully so, part of going to high school is to learn how to take tests. Fine. So we decided, we both came from homes that were not totally observant, although our homes were richly Jewish, but not totally observant. And all our parents, both sets of parents, all their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, they're in heaven today. Everyone is from 100%. Hundreds of descendants from these two families, Rothkopf and Noble. So we decided we're going to check out what Yiddishkeit is about. And, you know, we had, in other words, I once gave you Shein the Kollel, why I have the advantages of an FFB and the advantages of a BT. What is the advantage of a BT? The Gemara says, B'kom Shabbal Tshuvam Dimein Tzadikim Yigolim Yomod, because a BT chooses. Vic Snow never chose. I know who his parents were, who his neighbors were. Right or wrong, Vic Sohn, I mean, we're related to his neighbors, my wife's family. And I know who his uncle was, who didn't know Rav Snow, and I know how many Snows I taught over the years, and Garfield, oh, come on. So he never chose. All right. He's from beautiful. That's the advantage of a Baal Tshuva. He chose. A FFB has the advantage. He wasn't mixed up, Baruch Hashem. Ephraim grew up in a frum house. Ephraim's family is frum. His chinuch was frum. He never had to dance naked in Times Square to try to figure out who he is. You follow? So there's an advantage and a disadvantage. That's life. You can't choose who you're born to. Well, I do feel very strongly that all the Balei Tshuva, they don't realize it's great-grandparents pleading with God, Shelo yudach mimenu nidach, give us someone left in our family that's still Jewish. I believe they're pleading with God. And then you discover the blood in your veins. Converts, Chazal say, anyone who converts, his neshama was at Har Sinai. Anyone who converts. I mean, and you inevitably, it's just unbelievable. You'll talk with the convert and you see, it's a Yiddish neshama. There's something there. It's beyond words. All right. So we decided our second year, my second year of high school, his first year, we're going to explore and see what Yiddishkeit is all about. So we went to Lubavitch. We went to Satma. I went to Satma. I saw the Satma Ruv. I would go, it would be after Shabbos, they would be still in Shalashuris. It was an interesting experience. We went to Teira Vidas, we went to Chaim Berlin, we were all over. But then we said, wait a minute, there's conservative, there's reform. So we went to the seminary, and we had an unbelievable experience. We come into the seminary, and we go into the library, and you know, that's what they were famous for. Today there's no library, it's beyond words, but the library, the manuscripts, the Geniza connection, and we come in, and who is sitting in the library with Svarim in front of him? Reb Moshe Bick. He was the leading rabbi in the Bronx, Reb Moshe Bick. This is not a JTS person. This is a Talmud Muvhak of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, of Rabbi Revel. He was the leading, he becomes the leading Haredi rabbi in the Bronx and then in Brooklyn. Who didn't hear Reb Moshe Bick? And we with his long beard and Bekesha, and we say to him, and I already knew a little bit, I said to him, Mala Kohen Beveit HaKvarat, what's Tutla Reb Moshe Bick? What is the Kohen doing in his cemetery? And he says, I'm saying it in English, he answered us in Yiddish, obviously, that if they have a book, Svarim, that no one else has, I'm going to let them rob the Svarim from me. And he was looking at very rare Svarim. So we were happy, we saw the seminary, and again, there was no feeling of a yeshiva. It was a feeling of an academic institution where everything centered around the library. So then we went to Temple Emmanuel. We go to Temple Emmanuel, and we want to walk in. You can't believe this, but it's true. The sexton is standing there next to the where they have the chapel, the weekday prayers, and he says you have to remove your head covering. You're not allowed into the chapel with your head covered. With a German accent, he says this to us. So I let him have it, Shakesta Shakzenu. He started chasing us. You don't know what went on. We're running down Fifth Avenue, and that's what I say. It's not true, but I always tell an audience, we found the machzeh, we found coverage. We were able to hide in St. Patrick's Cathedral. You follow me? That's what spared us. Now, I want to ask you a question. All right, I have to be honest with you, I say it in Israel when I walk past places that are open on Shabbos in Yerushalayim. In Tel Aviv, Mela, the Tinokot Shenishbu, but in Yerushalayim, in my neighborhood, to have a restaurant open Shabbos, to have there's a bar where they drink. I mean, I say it when I walk past, it's very upsetting to me. But I told you, I'm a Kanoi. I realize after dealing with Kalbach and thinking about it, and seeing my reaction to the rabbi in that shul, Hashem Yerachem, and my wife is worse than me. You should know, my wife is worse than me.
Can we assume that the rabbi in the shul that you were there?
Fine. He did.
I wouldn't be excited to hire that.
Alex. So he did shuvah, absolutely. But the woman had to get divorced. She was an eshetish. I don't want to go further. I know. Forget it. To be a rabbi in a shul after an incident like that, I don't know. I have a lot of difficulty. So they shot at me, David HaMelech.
I don't think you're the only person that would be bothered.
Take him. Gentlemen, can we curse people who don't observe? All right. And you'll see. Chassidic Rebbe got excited. And he shouted out about a Jew. Yimach shmo v'zichro. No? You've heard people talk like that. I need not tell you, here in today with the websites, look at some of the websites. It's overwhelming. The Frum websites, the Haredi websites, at times they're maledictions of Jews who don't think their way. It's beyond words. And can you curse? And here we have it. Mishnah Halachot Chelek Vav Siman Chaf Zayin. Are you allowed to curse for Shayim? And the person named Moshe Yeshayahu Stern, it's 1971, I don't know who this person is, he didn't know who it was either, Reb Menashe Klein, writes to him and he asked this very question. Now, listen the way he writes to him, very fascinating. We have a big problem today. Everyone with titles. When someone over 40 calls my house and leaves a message, my Michael Malka says to me, Rabbi so-and-so called. He said, okay, Rabbi, I don't know. This is Rabbi Chanovich speaking. Is your husband in? The Rav, look at his stationery. Look at the letter he wrote to me. It's published now twice. It's published in the Rav, and it's now been published in Rav and Rebbe, that letter. Look at the stationery. Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. No titles whatsoever. So if you use a title and you're under 40, I forgive you. You're young, you have an ego, you have to build a rep. If you're over 40 and have to use a title, Dovi, that's very, very sad. All right? What do you think? Reb Moshe Feinstein, when he got... Doret Moshe. Moshe Feinstein. The Rav called... without going into details, he says to this lady, he's calling to find out how her husband is. It's Yosef Soloveitchik. How is Rabbi Albert? And Rabbi Albert's wife gives the phone to Roy and come on, cut it out. It was Rabbi Kowalski. They were calling Rabbi Kowalski to find out how he is. And Rabbi Kowalski's wife, Zichronim Levracha, it's a world gone by, Rabbi of Young Israel of Hillcrest, Rabbi Shalom Dov Kowalski was ill. He had a heart operation. And the Rav called to find out how he is, and his wife Shulamit went crazy. Roy, cut it out. She figured it was Roy Albert, who was a mimic, and had nothing to do on Sunday morning, was imitating the Rav. You know how the story plays out? 15 years later, Rabbi Holz's son, David, is driving the Rav to a Sheva Brachas, or Barry's driving him to David's Sheva Brachas. It could be David was the eldest, it was his Sheva Brachas, and Barry is driving the Rav to Kew Gardens Hills to the Sheva Brachas. And the Rav asks, and who will be there? And Barry answers, the Rav, Rebbe, the Queen's Mafia will be there. And he starts listing out the rabbis, Schoenfeld and Sladowski, and Uncle Roy. And the Rav says, Uncle Roy, what do you mean? Oh, Uncle Roy is Rabbi Roy Albert. We call him Uncle Roy. Yeah, jetzt verstehe ich, now I understand. 15 years later, in the car, going to the Sheva Brachas on 147th Street in Kew Gardens Hills, the Rav put together that when Shulamit Kowalski said, Roy, cut it out, she was referring to Roy Albert, the mimic, who she felt was mimicking the Rav. So we have a minute today, particularly in the Haredi world, when you buy a Haredi book or Haredi newspaper, one-fifth of it can be ripped out and thrown away. Because every time they mention the Harav HaGon HaGadol, Harav HaGon HaGadol, Maran Posek HaDon Harav HaGon, Harav HaGon HaChassid, Harav HaGon HaTzadik, each one they give out marks. And the worst part is, believe me, I've written scholarship, 8 volumes already, Kanayin Hara. So whenever I mention a person the first time, I color, I give his Harav, who he was, what he did. And then you write scholarship, you're not allowed to write titles. I make an exception. This is what I worked out with Chaim Potok. How do you deal with the views of scholarship and respect as a Torah Jew? It works out very nicely. But when you read these books, one-fifth of it is just absolute repetition, but print is cheap today, so it goes on and on. So now Reb Menashe Klein has a real problem. You write to him, you write a question. If he knows who you are, he knows how to give you your titles, he's worried stiff, he may embarrass you, may insult you. When he doesn't know who you are, what do you write? Listen to what he wrote. Leman de lo chazina, someone I don't know. Mevarchina yehesh mei mevarach, your name should be blessed. And then, quote Shentipatol, Moshe Yeshaya Stern. And if you think this isn't enough, in the first line he writes, Acharei Drishat Shlomo Atov, Yislach, Ulai lo ta'ati karui lo, ki bilvilti makir kamina, v'yekabel hakavod kevin harulah. He asked for forgiveness. Maybe I didn't give you enough titles. I don't know who you are. Forgive me. Could you imagine? This is the world today, at least in the Haredi world, all right? I don't know. All I can tell you is I sign all the time. You see me answering emails. So maybe the first time I correspond with a person, I sign in Hebrew, Aaron Rakefet. Afterwards, all I sign is Aaron. Do you know why all I sign is Aaron? Aaron is my name, number one. Number two, who has time to sign more? Each time I don't write Rakefet, you understand, I save myself a minute. Multiply that by 20 emails a day, 6 days a week, 12 months a year, and figure out how many minutes I save by writing Aaron. Okay, it's unbelievable. So now he asked the question, can you curse sinners? And he refers to Reb Menashe Klein, that in one of your earlier svarim, you say we should pray for the apikorsim, that they should be chozrim b'tshuva. And he's asking a wonderful question. If you're cursing them, how can you ask them to do tshuva? It's like Alex said to me, maybe that rabbi did tshuva. I agree with you. I'm positive he did tshuva. But the problem is to make him rabbi of a shul, this bothers me. It's a terrible situation. You take Rav Mati alone, who you don't know what a star he was. I mean, my children went to his Fabrengens, and Malka and I once went. Thousands were there, and it was like 770 in an Israeli context. And what do you do now? What do you do after he was found guilty? And, you know, the judge, I can't believe. That judge, by the way, is being mentioned. She just got a very, very big appointment. She's a frum lady. She's a Chorev graduate. She doesn't cover her hair, but she's a shomer. She was my daughter's classmate. She was in my house many times. Mac Kalmanovich, I believe. Her maiden name is Mac. She goes with her maiden name and her married name. And they tell me, a genius in jurisprudence, in mishpat divri, in general law. And she's now got a very big appointment as not just a judge, but a district judge. And she found him guilty. I was amazed that the prosecution didn't ask for a different judge. How can a Chorev judge judge someone who had been principal of Chorev High School for boys? But what do you do? What do you do? All right, we want them to do tshuva. How do you pray for them to do tshuva? If we want to maledict them, they are sinners. Very interesting question. And you'll see from the tshuva, that he actually tells Reb Menashe Cotton that there's one Hasidic Rebbe, he doesn't give the name, but a famous Hasidic Rebbe, maybe it's the Satmarov or the Squarerov, I don't know, he doesn't give the name, cursed sinners in public and said, Yimach Shmum V'Zichrum. How do we pray for them to do tshuva? We have to pray to get rid of them. Ah, so here he gives a beautiful example. He says, look, what is our prayer against the sinners? V'lamashinim al tehi tikva. And what do we say at the end? Machnia zedim. And he says, it's not that we want to get rid of them. We want to get rid of their apikorsit. We want to get rid of their misdeeds. We're not maledicting them as individuals. We're maledicting their thinking. And he gives a very cute example then. He quotes the Vilna Gaon, you see all the sources. But he's absolutely right. We don't ask them. It's not that the Zaydim should drop dead. It's that their apikorsis should be compromised. Machnia Zaydim. Eradicate their apikorsis. And he says, he quotes, it's a Rabbeinu Yonah, based upon the Gemara in Brachot, that if someone is davening for the Omid, and he leaves out the Bracha, Tchiyat HaMetim, we're not worried about him, he made a mistake. But if he leaves out the Bracha against Minim, then we're worried he is an apikores and he doesn't want to curse himself. But he says, no, what this bracha really means, it's not the person you're cursing, but the apikorsis. And if someone skips that bracha, it's a sign he believes in the apikorsis. That's why we're not happy with him. And here he speaks about Chassidus. He says, and you know, tremendous battles were fought. I don't have to tell you that the Litvakin fought the Chassidim with passion. If you've ever looked at the Charamim that the Vilna Gaon signed, there are two volumes. It was published by Hebrew U. There was a Professor Volensky at Hebrew U, a frum individual. And he was a great expert in Hasidim and Litvakin relationships. And in his two volumes, he gives you all the battle, back and forth, the Paskvilas that you would call it today, the Charamim. Some of those Charamim are unbelievably sharp. But as Reb Menashe Klein says, it's not the Hasidim they're cursing, but Chassidus. They've gone off the path. This is leaving the path of our fathers and our grandfathers. She'ein ha'klala al ha'guf, ella al ha'chassidut. And very true. With all that you read of the Gaon and what the Gaon signed and the tremendous battle, it was not against Hasidim as human beings, as individuals. It was against Hasidic thinking. So here too, Shover Oivim Umachnir Zeidim, it means their thinking. You don't curse the individual. You don't want any harm to happen to him, but you want his thinking to be abrogated, to be nullified, to be removed. And he quotes here the Squarer Rebbe, the original Squarer Rebbe, who dealt with this very question. He gives you the source, and he prays for the Jews. But Machmir Zaydim, It's the minut, the apikorset, not the individual. And you don't say shover haminim. You don't say break them, destroy them. Machnia. They should lose the intellectual battle. It's like a debate. One team debates another. Who wins? The dialogue should not be in their favor. They should be humbled. They should admit, like the children of Korach, Moshe Emet, V'Torato Emet. And he's quoting the original Squarer Rebbe. And absolutely, we should pray for them to be Chozer B'Tshuva. And here, very fascinating Gemara. Here he quotes Reb Mendele of Vitebsk, one of the early Hasidic Rebbeim. And he, in one of his talks, deals with the Gemara in Sota, Daf Yudalid Amid Aleph. A friend, do me a favor, turn on the air conditioning. Am I right? It's a little hot in the room, or I'm just getting upgehitzt in my lecture? Turn it on. Okay, leave it. If it's low, it's good. Gentlemen, an unbelievable Gemara, Sota Daf Yudalid Amid Aleph. And the Gemara deals, a famous Gemara, Darash Rebbe Simulai, one of the great Dashanim in the Gemara, Rebbe Simulai, you all know him from Tayyat Mitzvah, etc. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to enter Eretz Yisrael? Ki lechol mipiyu hu tzarech, o lesbo mitova hu tzarech. Why do you want to enter? Eretz Yisrael is beautiful. A good friend of Ephraim's, Lustig, Nachum Lam said the following vort: if you want to talk to God, you go to the Kotel. If you want God to talk to you, you go to Machne Yehuda. And Machne Yehuda, I remember when Russians would come in Aliyah, when the first refuseniks.
He's quoting Shalom Gold.
Quoting Shalom Gold, okay. Omedava B'Shem Omro. His parents told it to me in his name. But all right, Shalom Rabbi, Shalom Gold, Adarabba V'Adarabba. Machne Yehuda, the fruits, the vegetables. Oh, I was just in Osharad this morning. It's beyond words. Sunday morning, how do they have it all? Beautiful, what quality. No, Moshe Rabbeinu had to eat oranges and apples and bananas and persimmons. What? He could have got along without it. Why did he want so much to go into Eretz Yisrael? So he tells the Ribbono Shel Olam, many mitzvot you can only be mekayim in Eretz Yisrael. I want to be mekayim those mitzvot. I don't have to tell you, mitzvot batliot baretz, truma, maisrat, shvi'it, karbonot, beit hamikdash, etc. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I will give you credit as if you did all these mitzvot. But then they start listing out all of Moshe Rabbeinu's chiyot. And he said, I deserve to see Eretz Yisrael for all the good I have done. And what do you mean all the good? God said he would destroy the Jews. And Moshe said, if you're going to destroy the Jewish people, l'cheni no misifrecha. Right or wrong? Cut me out. I don't want to go on without the Jewish people. Ulaposheim Yafkiya Shabike Shrakmim Aposhe Israel Sheyakzarubachuva Vien Pigiya Elitvila. And what does the word Pigiya mean? He prayed to God, and here's Moshe Rabbeinu himself praying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, have mercy on the sinners. Don't destroy them. Let them be Chozer B'Tshuva. No, an open Gemara. Reb Mendele Mevitebsk builds upon this Gemara that you absolutely have to pray for the sinners, and Chas V'Chalila you should say Yemach Shmo on Jews. And Menashe Klein says, this is open halacha, open gemara, b'lishum choleg, No one differs with this Gemara. And absolutely, Be'ezrat Hashem zot raya b'ruya shemuchuyovim anachnu lehit palel al kol hanidachim sheyashuv la Hashem b'mcheira b'yomeinu. Amen. Okay? Now there's something beautiful here. And I'm going to tie it in with the Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And here he's, you know, Reb Menashe Klein is down to earth. His feet walk on the ground. He says, you're telling me some Rebbe. Chaval, he didn't mention the name. I don't know who it is. Could be the Satmar, could be the Scram. It has to be, it's not the Lubavitcher. That's for sure. Could be it was during the Machlokes over the Six-Day War with their miracles. Weren't there miracles? It's before Entebbe, so it can't be, you know, with the Six-Day War, the Satmaruv came out right away with the first Sefer written about the Six-Day War. It's written by the Satmaruv, Al HaGula V'Al HaTmura. We'll talk about it in the context of this class shortly, or today, or next week. It comes up very fascinating. And that Sefer could be that the Satmaruv, when he was speaking, got carried away and said, Yimach Shmam, you know, in his Hungarian Yiddish. Could be, that's what he's referring to. And Rav Menashe Klein says, fine, your Rebbe said this. You quote, Shara'a ra'u eza gadol v'tzadek shekinat Hashem tzvakot diber bo lefamim ki leil b'fimfiv u'bitil b'libo And what he's saying here, he goes on and says very simply, gentlemen, we've all been exposed to Gedolei Yisrael. You wouldn't be sitting here if you wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't be sitting here. No? Do we emulate them in everything? A very interesting question. People have often asked me, you're a Talmud of the Rav. Do you do everything like the Rav? And I have one answer. Whatever I discussed with the Rav and we spoke and with these ears I heard, with these eyes I saw, I do like the Rav. What I know he does, but I didn't see and I wasn't part of it, I do like Klal Yisrael. I'll give you a simple example. Yontif Sheni, to me, is Pashit, you can't observe a second day in Eretz Yisrael. Pashit, Zil Kribe Rafu. I spoke about it the other day at this book launch Tuesday night. I gave a year and a half of Shurim in the Kollel. All right, there's a different problem. How can you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? How did the Minchat Plaza, how did the Alter Rebbe, the Rav Shulchan Aruch, how did Rav Chaim Briska, how did the Chacham Tzvi, how did they paskin against it? All right, I dealt with that in this very room. I spent 6 months on the question years ago. Fine. It's a legitimate question. But I spoke with the Rav at length on this topic. And I, that's the way I do, that's what I do, that's what I emulate. On the other hand, Leil HaSeder, taking three matzah, is nonsensical. Leil HaSeder is a din in Lechem Mishnah. If there's a din in Lechem Oni, you have to break one of the matzah. It has to be the Lechem Mishnah that becomes Lechem Oni. So the Rav, of course, took only two matzah. Look into the Rambam, look into the Rif, you'll see. I take three matzah. What can I do? I was never at the Rav Seder. And Klal Yisrael takes three for many reasons. Kohen Levi Yisrael, they give no Lechem Oni, it's an addition to the Lechem Mishnah. How can you infringe upon the Lechem? You follow me, Natan? How can you infringe upon the Lechem Mishnah? So I have a set answer. I do like my Rebbe when I saw with these eyes, heard with these ears. Other matters, I do like Klal Yisrael. If you notice, when I'm called to the Torah, I emulate the Rav exactly. It's all machlokes, whether you're right or wrong. You lean this way, you lean that. Exactly like the Rav. People ask me, how do you do that? It's machlokes. It's the way the Rav did it. I saw the Rav get an aliyah many times in the yeshiva. like this, this side. Torah open. A big lumdus we learned. Second bracha, Torah closed. Again, this side. Move the shkinah. All right? So he says to the student, why did you dafka take the poor example from your Rebbe when he lost his temper, got carried away, and said, Yimach Shmo? What about all the tzidkit that your Rebbe does? Are you emulating him there? And here I have to tell you a story. Check it out in one of Reb Heschel Shechter's books if he mentions it, because I want to be sure my memory is correct. But there was a Briska Chumra. Gentlemen, we all wear tzitzit. Fine. No, none of us have a keem the oraita b'zman hazeh. We don't have tchelet. All right. Though we wear tzitzit, certainly keem the rabbanim, no two ways about it. But, you know, is it really a beged? Is this a beged? And the whole problem for a briska, you go into Rishut HaRabim, and you're wearing something. You say, well, we don't know what it is. It's you're carrying. It's a malbush that serves no purpose. A keem the oraita there is not. No, it's not a shirt. It's not pants. What's it? So the briska, this is what I'm told, and including the Rav had a chumrah on Shabbos, they didn't wear tzitzit b'shut harabim. Fine. Then, by the 70s, the swing to the right, the Rav had talmidim already, and he found out they were emulating him not wearing tzitzit on Shabbat. He was very upset. And he said, this chumrah they take of mine, what about all the other chumras I do? And it's exactly what Reb Menashe Klein says here. So it's a very fascinating comment, very fascinating Musa. And he goes on further that we have no right to judge, we have no right to be angry. We have no right to laugh. I'll use his words. Afilu lahalig al gedoli Yisrael asher toratam umanatam yomam v'layla. And all right, sometimes they get carried away, but that's not for the average Jew. So what do you see from here? You see from Rabbi Menashe Klein that here's a man in Borough Park from a very narrow Hungarian background. Here's a man, Unvar, who grew up, or later met in the concentration camps, Eli Wiesel, people who came from, Eli Wiesel was already Vishnitz, the Unvar was already in the Munkach area. Very narrow background, but you see there's a certain open-mindedness here. He struggles. He doesn't want to criticize a Hasidic Rebbe who evidently said Yimach Shmo about Jews, but he struggles. How do you relate Machnia not to curse, but their apikurset should disappear? It's like the Litvakin who fought with the Hasidim. It wasn't that they wanted the Hasidim to disappear. They wanted Hasidut to disappear. Very interesting analogy. And the way he tells the student off to a certain degree, is this all you want to emulate? A very, very fascinating tshuva. But now I'll show you another tshuva. Again, captures the world. Narrow, the struggle. Very brief tshuva. Basically one source. And here we come back to the 19th century. My dear students, the most famous yeshiva in the world was the Voloshin Yeshiva. No one in this room learned in the Voloshin Yeshiva because the original Voloshin Yeshiva was closed down by the Russian government in 1892. The history of Voloshin itself is a fascinating topic, and if the Rebbeinu Shlomo will give me strength in years, I will deal with it in great depth. I'm now researching it thoroughly. My grandfather learned in Volozhin. It's my mother's father. But that wasn't the real Volozhin. That was the Volozhin that opened again in 1895. But it never, ever reached the level of the original Volozhin. In other words, by then, Slabodka and Mir, Telz had overtaken the original Volozhin, and they were like the most elite yeshivas, and Volozhin was like a junior college compared to the elite university type yeshiva. But the original Volozhin existed from 1802 to 1892. That is the Volozhin that gave birth to Volozhin and Brisk, to the Soloveitchik family, and all that goes with it, and its tziv, etc. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'achol nivra b'ra'ol. But I'll tell you something amazing about Volozhin. The original Volozhin turned out Gedolei Yisrael, of every type and hashkafa you can imagine. Reb Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, where did he learn? Volozhin. Reb Elchanan Wasserman, who was as distant from Zionism as we are from the moon, where did he learn? Volozhin. Rav Avram Dovber Kahana Cook, Rav Avram Dovber Kahana Shapiro, the last Rav of pre-World War II of Kovna, the most prestigious rabbinate in Eastern Europe, considered by many an enlightened Jew, where did he learn? Volozhin. You go on, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, one after another, the Levush Mordechai, where were their roots? Everything came from Volozhin, name after name after name. And yet that same Volozhin turned out endless Jews who broke with Torah observance to a certain degree. I say a certain degree because essentially I think they all remained Shomer Shabbos. There were exceptions, but what's the most famous thing that every little kid in the state of Israel knows? Chaim Nachman Bialik. Where did he learn? Volozhin. And you can go on of the Maskilim and the editors of the newspapers and the founders of the Zionist movement, one after another, were products of Volozhin. Now, what happened in the 19th century was the Haskalah reached Eastern Europe. But unlike Western Europe, it took on a more positive tinge, a more positive coloration, a more positive hue, H-U-E, in Eastern Europe. Now, what do I mean by that? Das Kohler in Germany, God have mercy, led to reform, led to a massive assimilation, led to intermarriage, led to people becoming Catholics, Protestants. It's so sad. The Haskalah in Eastern Europe led to the revival of biblical Hebrew, the revival of the biblical language, the revival of Zionism, the Netziv of Volozhin and many others, all products of Volozhin, gave us the Mizrahi. It was very, very different. Now, in the 19th century, how did these ideas transmit? It's not like today, you turn on the computer and you all see the power of the internet, the power of the computer. The New York Times issued a letter, this is unprecedented, a letter of apology, how they totally mishandled the election and they weren't up to date, didn't realize what was happening, were prejudiced, etc. And they say the skarim, samach shin, they say the skarim, how do you say that in English? I'm forgetting my English, no? The Poles, skarim is a better word. They say the skarim didn't realize what's happening because they too didn't appreciate what's going on in the computer. And there's no question that today I'm a dinosaur, but even a dinosaur, I start to appreciate what the computer is about and what these websites are about. Now, in the 1800s, they didn't have computers, but they had newspapers. They had periodicals. They had books. It took a while, but these books made the rounds, these newspapers, Hamelitz, and involution was not a simple matter. The administration, the Gedolei Yisrael, were opposed to the secular general literature. Many of the students under the Gemara, in their stancia, which is the Russian word they used for where they lived, where they rented a room, Avraham. And he says, what does stancia mean in Russian? Station?
Stancia.
And when they say, I rented a room and I have a stancia, they use that word in Volozhin, in the memoir literature. Would it mean a place where they rest their head? A place where they stop? Is it room? I remember the word was a station on the metro. So they used that word also when they rented a room. All right, but you don't recognize it.
Maybe a room in a train.
No, it's a room in a house, but it's like where they're stationed, where they're grounded. We would say in English where they're grounded. So they had these volumes, they had these books. And of course, what we're touching upon here is the most basic question. How, they asked Moriah Rebbe, everyone has written about this, but the question is very simple. They approached Rav Soloveitchik and they said to him, Rebbe, your grandfather, Reb Chaim, the Netziv, your great-great-grandfather, your great-grandfather, Rav Raphael Shapiro, everyone was totally opposed to any non-Torah book. Novels, poetry, periodicals, Zionist literature. How do you become so open-minded? And all this material, not only do you read and know, but you encourage your students, the world, and of course, Rav Heshe Shechter writes that the Rav answered, times have changed. And there was a lot of criticism of him. That's a very simplistic answer. But the question is real. So take a look at this question with that background. I'm quoting to you from Mishnah Halachot, Chelek Yud Bet, Siman Mem. And this is unbelievable. He's writing in 1986, Malat Kvod Yedidi Harav Hagon V'chulu, he doesn't give you a name. And you asked me whether you're allowed to daven in a house where they have Sifrei Minut. Ulefize, you not only mean books, but you talk about itonim. And just think for a minute. On Friday, I get Gez, and I get Yediyat Achronot, Yediyat Yerushalayim for 5 shekel. My daughter has a subscription to Mariv and to Makar Rishon. And I get the freebie. My daughter actually subscribes to that too. It's delivered to our house, Yisrael Hayom, which you get a freebie. Now imagine, that's in your house, Shabbat, during the week. You want to learn, I don't daven in the house, but you want a bench, And you all know in these newspapers you have good and you have not so good. You have Svarim, I have many volumes on the history of the Jews. Maybe there's, I don't know, I can tell you the most basic volume that I had to know by heart in my past Professor Agus's course, then he was my professor in graduate school, but that was a different story. But Marx and Margolis's history of the Jewish people. And the only thing in there that's not totally orthodox is they accept the Dutroux-Yeshayahu theory. But there were many fine orthodox scholars in Germany and Greater Germany who accepted the theory at that time. Today, we no longer accept that theory because archaeology has proved it incorrect. All you have to do is go to the museum, the Shrine of the Book, where they have the Yeshayahu manuscript. And you take a look, it's the oldest Yeshayahu manuscript in the world, and it is one manuscript. So today we have archaeological evidence against Dutroux Yeshayahu. But that's the only thing in those two volumes, Marx and Margolis. But you have other volumes that, you know, deal with that. I have volumes of Solomon Schechter, which is fascinating, Louis Ginsberg, where you're going to find some concepts which are not 100%. No, are you allowed to daven? And that house, and he says to the person asking the question, you're absolutely not allowed to daven in a house where you have sifrei minim. And he quotes the Hasidic Rebbe, Sefer Derech Pekudecha, and he says it is mamish, like avoda zara, vavoda zara hu kmo tsoa, tsei tomalo, get out. And he brings sources, and it's not only books, but even a newspaper that has copy cursed in it. And he quotes, I'll quote the Gemara to you in a second, a tremendous proof that these svarim, these newspapers, are the source of all evil.
Relax.
Give me one second. Let me quote. Excuse me. Well, let me quote the Gemara, then you can ask. But I want to tell you one story that those of you familiar with Shulamit Soloveitchik Meiselman's memoir, The Soloveitchik Heritage. So all of you know the Soloveitchik Heritage is a very fascinating volume. There was a tremendous outcry in the family. Some felt she was too honest in her description. You understand, it's like the relationship between Reb Moshe and his five children. And Reb Moshe, all he had eyes for was his eldest son, the genius Reb Yosef Dov Halevi, Mori Rebbe, Reb Shmuel Soloveitchik. I learned with all three Soloveitchik boys. Children, sons, Reb Shmuel, my chemistry professor. Oh, what an individual! What a human being! And he suffered because his father favored Reb Yosef Dov. And she's very honest, and the girls all together. But they had a wonderful mother. For what the father lacked, according to Shlomit, the mother made up. So there's a critique of the volume. I consider it a very, very honest volume. But our world, when we read the Torah, we take honesty. Katonet Pasim, what we learn from that. Look into the Rishonim, look into the Mefarshei HaMikra. But we're not willing to take it. And the Torah will accept it and deal with it. Look into Rav Hirsch, Yaakov, and Esav, and Rivka, and Yitzchak. And all right, this debate is endless. But when it comes to Gedolei Yisrael, you saw what happened to Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, okay? Not Reb Shmuel, to his brother, Reb Nassim Kamenetsky. You see what happened to Reb Natan, Reb Nassim Kamenetsky. It's fascinating. So some of the Soloveitchik family is very upset with Shulamit for writing this memoir. I believe her son, Reb Moshe Meiselman, didn't allow it into his yeshiva, right? What's the yeshiva called? Torat Moshe? I don't believe the volume was allowed into the yeshiva, his mother's own volume. So she has a story there, how I believe it was Reb Baruch Be'er came to see Reb Moshe. You have to look inside to see if I'm quoting it correctly. In Warsaw, and Reb Moshe walked out of the room, and there was a newspaper there, and he threw it onto the floor. He wouldn't do it in front of his Rebbe, but he did it when he walked out of the room. I believe Tova told me years ago that that story is impossible, because Reb Baruch Be'er, there are cherets for Reb Moshe as the son of his Rebbe, of Reb Chaim's son, he would have never thrown it on the floor. But the story reveals this conflict, this how do we approach? Okay. The Gemara is very sharp. Chagiga daf tetvav amid bet. And here you have the problem that we've alluded to and discussed and preached about so many times, Rebbe Meir learning Torah from Acher. All right? This is, I can put it into maybe something you can feel, tangible. Imagine you want to learn in the 1930s, the 1940s, and there's a Gaon Adir teaching at Hebrew Union College. Natan or Nassan, as you know yourself? Do you know yourself as Nassan or Natan? What does your girlfriend call you? No girlfriend yet. Oh, we'll get there. Natan, let me say it my way so I don't have to trip over my tongue. You want to study at Hebrew Union College? No, can anyone tell me who taught there? Talmud? Rav Shmuel Atlas, guy was a Gaon Adir, a Europeish Gaon. Don't ask what became of him. I once showed the class, and you can find it online, that a Gaon, his father was Shvela Rav, he came from Gedolei Yisrael, he issued the Ravid with the excellent Haga'ot, Ha'arot. What a genius. What was it, the Ravid and Baba Kama? I forget already. Baba Kama, I believe. Yeah, okay. No, can you go study with him? How do you study with Acher? And the Gemara struggles. How did Rebbe Meir? So the Gemara says he took the what do you call them, the seeds, but the covering he threw away, the apikursus he didn't. All right, this is a very delicate question. A very delicate question. It's a lot to dashen. It's not so simple how I told you, Rabbi Meir and Acher, and they're running together on Shabbos, or one reading, it's Shabbos Yom Kippur, and Acher says to Rabbi Meir, he's talking with him in learning, and Rabbi Meir's on his, and Rabbi Acher's on his horse, and he says to him, Adkan Tchum Shabbos, turn back. No, Acher, you're the biggest apikoros ever. What do you care about Chum Shabbos? But he says to his Talmud, you're observant yet. Turn back. It's fascinating. No, hear the description of Acher. So the Gemara is struggling, who is Acher? What went wrong? All right, there are reasons why he became an apikoros. He saw a kid going up on a ladder and keep it up the yam, and the kid falls and doing all these mitzvot, the kid dies. Omro love. Al Acher, Bishah Shahayu Amei Bivet HaMedrash Habei Sifrei Minim Noshrin Mecheko. That about Acher, they said when he stood up in the Beis Medrash, stood up when you're sitting, like you're eating food, crumbs of food, all right? When I eat, a man makes crumbs. Somehow women know how to eat much more elegantly than men. And then you make crumbs, so I stand up and you shake the crumbs out. I try to shake it over the table, not to get the floor, not to get the floor covered with crumbs. He stood up, Sifrei Minim fell out of his lap. And the Gemara says, that's how he became Acher. So you see, Reb Menashe Klein, 100% against studying, reading books, newspapers that do not conform with Torah Hashem Tamima.
And that's the New York Times, or that's
He's referring to I don't know if he means the New York Times, but for the sake of argument, Jewish Week, Jewish Press.
That's my point. I'm saying Jewish Press. Are we talking about the critique of pure reason, or are we talking about Dafka Jewish things that are not?
I would imagine he means more Jewish, like Hamelitz, like going back to the Lashon, like reading the novels that came out in beautiful modern Hebrew. That's what, reading Gretz. Gretz was very big in the Lashon. People read it in German at the time. There was not yet a Hebrew translation, an English translation. But that's the books he's referring to.
So it's Dafka talking about any Jewish source that is not...
It'd be very hard for him to ask the New York Times, because Rav Moshe Feinstein read the New York Times every morning, and that is an absolute fact. Okay? He didn't speak English as well as he read it. Follow? His English speaking was very elementary, but he read it, they say, very, very well. My dear students, this is a fascinating
question.
What
about something like Abraham Joshua Heschel? Where does that fall into?
I can tell you as follows. Rabbi Menashe Klein probably would not read Rabbi Avraham Yeshua Heschel. The Rav, this Chaim Soloveitchik has said, and Chaim says something about his father, you can accept it at face value, that his father said a number of times he wishes he could write English as well as Rav Avraham Yeshua Heschel. What does that tell you? But let me tell you something. let me tell you something else. Let me tell you something else. My second Rebbe in Yeshiva University, Yeshiva Chanan, was my last Rebbe to die. He died this past year, Rabbi Yosef Weiss. You've heard the name. So Rabbi Yosef Weiss was my second Rebbe. And he was from Satmar origins. He used to go to the Satmar Rav on Hoshana Rabbah when he could travel. He was Hungarian. He made believe he didn't know English. I mean, you can ask Rabbi David, Avishai David will tell you. He made believe he didn't know English. He knew English better than we did, but he tried to give that image. He was a wonderful Rebbe. I gained a lot from him. He was married to Rav Shemshma Ful, here's his great-great-granddaughter. You follow? I think she's still alive, should live and be well. So he introduced me to Rav Hirsch. So one Shavuot, I was his guest. I wanted to stay in the yeshiva, to be there for Shavuot. I mean, I lived in the Bronx. The Bronx was a midbar. You have no idea. It was a desert there. A million Jews. No spirituality whatsoever. There were a few Orthodox synagogues beyond the East Bronx, which was already being overrun by a different element, where Rav Moshe Bick was the Rav and the Posek. He had a few shuls, for instance, Professor Tarrigan, who will be in class tomorrow. His uncle was Rabbi Tarrigan, had a very big shul in University Heights. Rabbi David Hollander, Mount Eden. But it basically, you had to look high and low to find the Shomer Shabbos. It was very sad. So I needed a place to eat, so Rav Yosef Weiss invited me to eat in his house. So we're eating in his house. You know, we lived in little apartments. It's not like we lived in the big houses that I would later live in Maplewood, New Jersey. I had an attic bigger than my whole apartment in Yerushalayim there. So... he shows me a closet filled with svarim. I had books all over, books like I have today. Books all over. And in the closet filled with svarim, right in the middle, are all of Avraham Yehoshua Heschel's works. So that tells you something. He was, again, it's a sad figure. A man who had so much and knew so much, and Kapichtan Sereb's brother, the Kapichtan Sereb's son, a cousin to so many Rebbeim, and he came to America and he winds up in Hebrew Union College. He couldn't last there long. He found a home in JTS, Jewish Theological Seminary. But by that time, JTS had one dominant figure, Professor Shaul Liebman. And those of you who know the history of JTS, Shaul Liebman looked down upon Professor Heschel. Professor Liebman was kulo halacha. There was nothing else to Torah than halacha. And when you get involved with philosophy and Agada and Hasidus and Kabbalah, you're an amor, it's a boor. You follow? So poor Professor Hayer, Professor Liebman was lame. No one came near him. He was the dominant figure. But that's the answer. But this is a very interesting question. Halacha l'maisa, what we're dealing here is the question that has haunted us since Mendelssohn left the ghetto. Do we integrate or do we ghettoize? Which way can we perpetuate Yiddishkeit all the more? And I have to tell you, there is no black and white answer. You take a look at the story I told you of that fellow who I ate Leil Shabbat with, nice fellow, Zev, can't go home, can't talk to his parents. Read the book that came out in Israel, Charedim Legoralam, which is about how Nachal Charedi began. Read that volume, you'll cry. And today, you know what happened in Beit Shemesh, Ramat Beit Shemesh on Thursday. A chayal with a beard and payas and uniform appeared there, and Kanoim started to beat him up. I would arrest them, throw them to jail, and make them pay him each one 100,000 shekel for punching him. Okay? But the police get there too late, and that's the way it is in life. I want to give the police advice, set up some decoys, and do what you have to do. But you see, Haredim walk away, curse their religion. Look at the books written in America. But now take the open education. Take a look in Israel, Dati, Mamlachti, Dati education. Take a look at the finest yeshiva hester. Take a look how many kids go into the army, go into life, and there's now a new Hebrew word, datlashim. Datiyim liyumiyim l'sheava. Past tense. Now, it's true, they don't leave Yiddishkeit altogether, and many of them do come back later when they marry and have children and realize that without Yiddishkeit, we have nothing to pass on to our children. You follow? But this is an open question. I don't want to be smart enough and be a wise guy and say, why you won out? What we do is fabulous. What we do, we can raise a kid like Yomo who doesn't know what time it is and what day it is and where he belongs and is wandering around, the wandering Jew. Great for YU. No. How many kids did we lose? I told you my heartache. I was in Florida with a graduate of Torah Shraga at YU, a good kid at one time. I taught his father many, many years ago. Father is a fabulous Jew. The kid in YU doesn't put on tefillin, doesn't daven. Oh my gosh, what a lackadaisical attitude to Yiddishkeit. What went wrong? So you see, there's no black and white answer. We struggle. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, in my little world, I succeeded. My wife succeeded. Kanayin hara. I don't want to go further, but I'm working now on my great-grandchildren. That's all I will say to you. We succeeded. But is it for everybody? Can everybody succeed? You notice the Lubavitcher Rebbe always had a dichotomy. If you came, I had students who asked the Rebbe, what should I do now? This was a girl finishing a year in Michlala. The Rebbe wrote, Beit Yaakov Kadima. That's the answer she got. This girl was as much as a Beit Yaakov girl as I'm a Chinaman. But she went to Rebbe Tosh, she went to Beit Yaakov. I had a student in BMT, wrote to the Rebbe, I met him years later. He's the Chabad lawyer. He kisses me, he hugs me, he says to me 40 years after he had me as a Rebbe, 45 years later, 48 years later, he says, Rebbe, you were the only one on the BMT faculty. I remember where we're Detroit, where he's from, that didn't laugh at me when I showed everyone a letter I got from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I said, a kid has a Lubavitcher soul. Fine, good. Did the Rebbe ever tell anyone who had a PhD, who was a genius in mathematics and physics and chemistry, did he ever tell anyone, give back your doctorate? Lehefech, he got hold of a mathematician, and it's on video. The Chabad has everything on video. Clippage, where the Rebbe is telling him, I'm going to give you my brother's Kitvei Yad in mathematics, and I want you to edit it and publish it. And the Rebbe says, I will pay for everything. Come on. So you see, there's a dichotomy. The Rav was not as open-minded as the Rebbe. The Rav felt you have to take on the modern world. This is where we live. These are the challenges. And you all know Rabbi Branshtig. You have to know my chavur. We grew up together with Rosh Hashiv in YU. Then he went to Lambeth College. He's not well today. He should have Refuah Shleima. On the Monday class, there's a Talmud of his here. Mark Watson was his Talmud. He can appreciate what I'm saying. So at the Shleishim eulogy, the Shleishim, every night a different Rebbe, when the YU based Medrash eulogized the Rav. So Abba Branshpigel says, and Rebbe wanted me to get a PhD. I should go to Bernard Revel Graduate School and get a doctorate. And everyone laughed because Abba Branshpigel was light years away from broadness. And so he was a Yeshiva College graduate. All right, Mela. But a light years away from the concept of a PhD. And the Rav was more different than the Rebbe. He was upset. There was a famous case of a relative of Yitzchak Rubin, and this relative, his father was one of the Shomer Shabbos doctors in Boston, and this kid was accepted to Harvard, and he wanted to go to medical school, and suddenly he decides to go to Lakewood. He's no longer alive, I remember. And the Rav was very upset that he chose Lakewood over Harvard. What will be with him? Nacha Meshulach, another Meshulach. Yes, and the Rav had a different attitude. Gentlemen, this is a very fascinating question, but let it hang fire. Ah, but you see, we're dealing with Apikorsen, we're dealing with Sifrei Minut. And the next question, unbelievable. What is the halachic status of a Baal Tshuva? And family status, genealogy. And then, when he deals with that, he deals with an unbelievable question, one of its kind. I hope that Yomo and Avraham are listening, and one day they'll do a doctorate on Russian Jewry of the 20th century in the Halacha. A very simple question. Does a Jew who has ability, a Talmud Chacham, an Ashkan in modern Hebrew, is he allowed to be just a rabbi, a Rosh Yeshiva, or should he devote all his time to helping to save the Jews in Russia? Ein lanu pikuach nefesh yoter gadol miseh. So to reiterate, what did we do today? I'm not finished yet. I have a little surprise here. What did we do today? Okay, we finished out Karl Bach, and the fan mail I got for Karl Bach, or the anti-Karl Bach mail, was about even. The Rebbe bows his head, and I fall back on what Klal Yisrael does. And if we sing Kol Ribon Olam, and evidently everyone has a good side and a bad side, and a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara, and maybe I'm a fool for thinking I don't have a Yetzer Hara. My ego is gone, the Muslim movement I grew up, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson, I see him in front of me. Oh, to have known such Jews, I should be much greater than I am, much more learned, much more filled with Yirat Shemayim, what I knew and saw in my life. But maybe all humans are not like this, and I have to be benevolent, and I'm samach on two gemaras that you can't refute me. Then we saw a very fascinating tshuva. Do you curse Mechalalei Shabbos? Not a simple question. But you certainly can't say Yimach Shmo. Maybe Shem Rishon Yerkav. Of course, the Mishnah says it in Yuma. And shame. It's, I said this to my wife, shame, you're not saying they should rot. Their teachings, their message, their apikursis. So it's exactly what Menashe Klein is saying. The other question about the tonim and the sifrei minim, this is a fabulous question. The lushan of the 19th century, boy, you would see it right before your eyes. The picture of Reb Shlomo speaks for itself, and that wins me over. Here it is. It'll be interesting to know who is in the picture and what became of them. These are all people who could walk in. It was a small Rebbe yet. The Lubavitcher was yet a small Rebbe. You could walk in. He could meet you, talk with you. You didn't need an appointment. It was in the middle of the night. And here they are. Well, it may be the middle of the night. Outside, 70-70. My dear students, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's She'ur for all the demonstrators against Trump who refuse to accept democracy when it doesn't go their way. Now, this, please pass back to Michael Miller. A movie came out, Fastball, and the movie is about the fastball of the pitches in baseball. And here's a review, and the first thing, the person reviewing it who studied in this very colon, his two sons studied here, one of my teachers, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, is an avid baseball fan. He sees baseball as particularly engaging for students of Talmud. His reasons, because it's slow moving and you can think, he said. Every play requires you to ponder what to do, how shall I react to the reality that I see on the playing field. It goes on and on. And to me, if you have that Talmudic mind, it's one of the reasons you will love baseball. If anyone's interested, it is yours. This is Alan Blau. This is... one second. Okay, here's my little surprise. Anyone interested... Shayurim Mitzvahim Bahalacha. Classes being run, you can learn Shkita of Ofat, Bechemat, Mashkichei Kashrut, Minakrim, everything you want. Classes to be a Sefer Stam to the Mohel. Unbelievable world today. This is, I can't get over this. This is from a Sfadik Beis Medrash in the spirit of Reb Mordechai Eliyahu. It's all English-speaking people from England, America, Canada, and dealing with Psak Halacha L'maisa, and I went through it. It's pretty solid. Finally, you all know that earlier this year, a very famous movie star died, Stephen Hill. Stephen Hill, you know, was born with the name Krakowski, became a Baal Tshuva, a quintessential Baal Tshuva, outstanding individual. He has a sister living in Yerushalayim who's also a Baal Tshuva. I know her. Her last name is Weiss, Joanne Weiss. 12 years younger than her famous older brother. And she and her husband lived in Muncie. They came in Aliyah. They're wonderful people. And people were Menachem Avil, and they told the following stories in the House of Mourning. I made copies. If anyone wants this, it's fabulous material. As you know, after Hill became a Baal Tshuva, he had to divorce his first wife, and then he married again. We heard the following stories in the Shiva house. Children by his second marriage grew up without a television in the house and not going to any movies. Remember, it's Muncie. The sifrei minim falling out of your pocket. His daughter once answered the phone when Dustin Hoffman called, asking to speak with her father. She said, "Who shall I say is calling?" He said, "Tell him it's Dustin." She said, "Dustin who?" Two, when Stephen Hill was in the middle of filming Yentler with Barbara Streisand, the star actress once called him at home in Muncie, New York, on Saturday night. He answered the phone, and when he heard who it was and realized that she was calling from Hollywood, he said, "Barbara, it's Shabbos where you are. You shouldn't be calling." And he hung up on her. Three, One afternoon, on the set of Mission Impossible, he sent a messenger over to the adjacent studio where they were filming Star Trek with the following message. Quote, Stephen Hill says there are 6 Jews on the Mission Impossible set and wants to know if there are 4 more in Star Trek who can join us for a minyan. Gentlemen, let's take Sidurim, Besorah Tova, till we meet tomorrow morning. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya, and please give me a sitter, and who will be Chazan?